Well, what a great theme, getting to talk about being called to freedom. And it's a tremendous blessing that Christians enjoy, getting to be freed people. We've talked a lot about what that means, and we'll continue to talk about being called to freedom for this year. That's going to be our theme, and it's going to be something that we need to learn to appreciate. We'll start this morning in Galatians, the fifth chapter, and we're going to start reading in verse 1, and then we'll skip down and we'll continue reading in verses 16 through 18. So in Galatians 5 at verse 1, the apostle says, Christ has liberated us to be free. Stand firm then and don't submit again to the yoke of slavery. Now, in verse 16, he continues this thought, and he says it this way. I say then, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. The flesh desires what is against the Spirit, and the Spirit desires what is against the flesh. These are opposed to each other, so that you don't do what you want. And we're going to talk for the month of February about how we learn to live like freed people. You know, to say that we're freed is absolutely true, but it takes a lot of work to learn what that's supposed to look like. What does that really mean in my life? And how do I learn to do this? So we're going to talk about some things that have happened in our past. One of the things that we're going to use to illustrate this is the Confiscation Act in 1861. Now, before we do that, we're going to start in Ephesians, the second chapter, and beginning at verse 1, we'll read just a little bit, and we'll compare it to what happened in our country as far as slaves were concerned. So Ephesians 2, beginning at verse 1, you were dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you previously walked according to the ways of this world, according to the ruler who exercises authority over the lower heavens, the spirit now working in the disobedient. We too all previously lived among them in our fleshly desires, carrying out inclinations of our flesh and thoughts, and were by nature or by practice children of wrath, as others were also. But God, who is rich in mercy, because of his great love that he had for us, made us alive with the Messiah, even though we were dead in trespasses. You're saved by grace. Together with Christ Jesus, he also raised us up and seated us in the heavens, so that in coming ages, he might display the immeasurable riches of his grace through his kindness to us in Christ Jesus. You're all saved by grace through faith. This not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not from works, so that no one can boast. We're his creation, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared ahead of time so that we should walk in them. This matter of salvation, this freedom that God grants us, is something that happens by grace. It is nothing that we earn. Now let's think for just a minute about slavery in our country. 1861, the beginning of the Civil War, there were still slaves in the South. And any slave who could make the trip from his home in the South, where he was enslaved, and could reach Union lines, could become a free man. Think about that for a minute. Freedom was there and you could have it, but you had to do something. You had to add something to what had been granted. The first Confiscation Act of 1861 is, you can read about it. Union generals were able to grant freedom to slaves who escaped their owners and made that arduous trip to Union lines. All along the way, they were subject to being being captured and taken back to their owners. Then something else happened. 1863, you had the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, how was that different than the first Confiscation Act? The Emancipation Proclamation didn't require you to do anything in order to be free. It was the act that Lincoln signed that granted freedom. It wasn't the Emancipation Proclamation Act plus what you could do, like it had been through it during the first Confiscation Act in 1861. Instead, it was the government granting you freedom. And all you had to do was say, I want to be free. The Emancipation Proclamation is kind of like what God did in granting us our freedom. It's not, if you'll come to this place, then I'll grant you freedom. I'll grant you freedom, and you don't have to add anything to what I'm going to grant. Now, this is a painting of what it would have looked like when a Union soldier came into slave quarters in the South, and they read for the first time the Emancipation Proclamation to those people that had been enslaved. You can see on the faces of those people that are hearing the Emancipation Proclamation read, different emotions. If you look at the woman at the foot of the table, she looks very hopeful. She knows that this is a great thing. But then look at the woman that's kind of in the background on the left side of the picture. She's worried. She doesn't know what this is going to be like. She hears the Emancipation Proclamation. The Union soldiers are reading it, but she's worried. What does this mean? You can see the bowl of cotton that's hanging in the rafters of the slave quarters. But emancipation, freedom, was complete at this point. She didn't have to do anything in order to make that happen. Well, let's think about this for a minute as it applies to us. How many of us thought when we got our first credit card that we had found freedom? We could now buy anything we wanted. And how many of us went out and went on a spending spree with our first credit card? In fact, that's one of the problems that people in college have with credit. They get a credit card when they enroll in college. And when they first have that credit card, they really make a mess out of their credit. They have freedom and they're excited about it. Remember we said car keys represented freedom? Well, a credit card represents freedom. But then there's this problem. It's called impulse buying. We've all been there. You go into a store. You don't have the money in your pocket to buy whatever it is that you see, but nevertheless, you have this credit card, this magic card. And you can whip that thing out and you don't have to pay for it. It's like it's free. Do you know Americans spend a little bit over $2,000 each every year on impulse purchases? We don't really quite know how to use our freedom. And it's not a problem that only affects women. So all you guys that are out there thinking, well, my wife goes to the store and she buys stuff all the time. It's not women that have the biggest problem. It's men. 23% of men and only 16% of women report spending $100 or more during the past year on an impulse purchase. What happens then? Our friends tell us, let's go shopping. Right? Let's go shopping. Shopping, I understand, is a social activity. And I guess the pandemic is kind of affecting that because now we can't go to the store with a group of friends. But they've done a lot of research on impulse buying and shopping. And you can understand why they do this kind of research. They want to figure out what they have to do in order to get you to spend more. So there's a lot of research that's done around this. But consumers apparently engage in impulse buying in a group situation. And they talk about five reasons why they do it. The first is not surprising. It's just going shopping with a bunch of friends. The second, others' opinions and others' behaviors are credible in our eyes, and we're observing others who are making impulse purchases. Others' opinions and behaviors are socially acceptable. We judge them to be real, and we judge them to be socially acceptable. Now, even more than that, we judge that they're desirable. If you buy things, you make friends, right? There's a competition to have what others have, and so when somebody else buys something, we buy something. And then I found this one really interesting. Other people's buying behavior justify buying products that I don't need or even want. Now that's an impulse purchase, if I ever heard one. Going shopping with a group of friends gets us in trouble. How does it get us in trouble? Well, the bill comes, and we know what that's like. And when the bill comes and they start piling up, we start thinking, I need to find a way to learn not to do this anymore. I don't have to do this. I need to learn how to avoid this worthless impulse buying. And do you know what they say is one of the best ways to learn how to control impulse buying? Never go shopping alone. Now, I read all of this and I thought, wait a minute, it was going shopping with friends that got us in trouble in the first place. And now you're telling me don't go shopping alone, because you're more likely to make impulse purchases. The thing that you need to remember is you need to go shopping with the right friend. Dave Ramsey, some of you probably heard of him. He does a lot of financial consulting. And he says you need to find a friend who's going to hold you accountable to the decisions that you've talked about with him already. You're not going to go out and do impulse buying. And so you go with a friend because we all have to go to the store. We all have to buy stuff. But you find a friend that you can go with that's going to hold you accountable. Now, let's think about this in terms of biblical information, because we're not concerned with not making impulse purchases here. We're really concerned with learning how to live like freed people. I need to learn how not to do some of those things that I did before because I'm a freed person. Proverbs, the 27th chapter, and at verse 17, says, iron sharpens iron. And he compares that to the way that a friend is. Now, I find it interesting that when he says iron sharpens iron, that's not the way that we generally think of sharpening a knife, is it? How do most of us sharpen a knife? We get a whetstone, a stone, and we run the knife across the stone, and the stone sharpens the iron. Well, that doesn't really quite apply here because the whetstone and the knife are not the same stuff. Iron sharpens iron. He's talking about that steel that you hold in your hand and you drag the knife across it. Steel sharpens steel. Iron sharpens iron. The two are alike. So find a man who is going to provoke us to good things. Now, all of us know, unfortunately, that when we go shopping with the wrong kind of friend, it leads to impulse buying. If we go with the right kind of friend, we can avoid it. Stupid things tend to happen when we're in a group. Cliff diving. Doing other stupid stuff usually starts with, hey, look. We wouldn't do those things if we weren't around the wrong kind of friend. Now here's Acts, the 28th chapter. The Apostle Paul is on his way to Rome. He is a prisoner at this point, and he really doesn't know what awaits him at Rome, except the prophet Agabus has already told him that it's not good. You remember how Agabus took off his girdle, bound his feet with it, and he's trying to get Paul not to go to Rome? Well, he's on his way to Rome anyway. God wanted him to go there. And I want you to notice how important it was that Paul found some people to be with. Acts 28, beginning at verse 14. After 3 months, we put out to sea in a ship that had wintered in the island. It was an Alexandrian ship with the figurehead of the twin gods Castor and Pollux. We put in at Syracuse, stayed there 3 days. From there, we set sail and we arrived at Regium. The next day, a south wind came up, and on the following day, we reached Puteoli. There, we found some brothers and sisters who invited us to spend a week with them. So we came to Rome. The brothers and sisters there had heard that we were coming. They traveled as far as the Forum of Appius and the Three Taverns to meet us. This was on the road that went down to the seashore. At the sight of these people, Paul thanked God, and he was encouraged. When we got to Rome, Paul was allowed to live by himself with a soldier to guard him. He needed those friends. Ecclesiastes, the 4th chapter, beginning at verse 7. Passage that we read in my wedding. Yeah, well, the preacher read it at my wedding. It's always been a favorite passage of mine. The wise man said, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man all alone. He had neither son or brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asks, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless. It's a miserable business. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. And thankfully, I found a really good one to be tied together with. If either one of them falls down, one can help the other up. Pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they'll keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Find good people. Hold them close. That's how you deal with the difficulties of learning to live like freed people. It works the other way too. If you have bad friends, it works to your detriment. Galatians, the second chapter, the apostle Paul describes an interaction that he had with Peter when Paul and Peter were both in Antioch. Listen to what he says. When Peter came to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was to be blamed. For before that, certain came from James. He did eat with the Gentiles. When they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision. The other Jews dissembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas was carried away with their dissimulation. Peter followed the wrong people. And other people followed Peter, following the wrong people. Even a man like Barnabas. No matter how strong you think you are, you need good friends. And if you fall in with the wrong friend, it's only to your defeat. So here's the first thing I would say about learning to live like freed people. Hang with people that empower you. Get away from people that don't, and hang with the people that improve you. That's Hebrews, the 10th chapter, verse 29. He says, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another. That's why we meet together on a day like this. Whether we're meeting at home on Zoom or we're meeting here in the building, we need friends. That's the first step to learning to live like a freed person. Find the right ones. I've been blessed in my life to have had good friends, friends who encouraged me. I've also dealt with people that didn't encourage me. And you know, it's hard to say, I don't want to be your friend anymore. Sometimes we have to. It's easier to say, I want to be with this group of people. And those friends that are trying to drag you down just won't come around anymore because they don't want to be with that group of people. So find good friends. Hold them close. Rely on them because they're going to help you learn to live like a freed person. Well, we're going to talk now for a minute about what Jesus did in allowing all of us to be free. And what a tremendous blessing that is. He signed our Emancipation Proclamation. It wasn't that he said, you need to come here, and if you make it, then I'll do something for you. He said, I'll do this. And all you have to do is take hold of it. If you want to do that, we'll help you do that this morning. You can submit to baptism. When you think about that, you're not doing anything. Somebody's doing something to you. And you say, okay, they're going to put you to death. You're not going to do anything. I'm going to have surgery on Tuesday. And when I go and lay down on that table and the guy sticks a needle in my eye, there's not a thing I can do at that point. Why do I let him do that? Because I'm pretty sure he can make my vision better. Why would I ever, why would Robert ever consent to letting Ron dip him underwater? Well, he thinks Ron can pick him up again. He doesn't think Ron's going to let him fall to the bottom of the pool. But in a very real sense, he's letting Ron put to death the old man, because Jesus said, I'll make you a new one. Yeah, I'm going to put you to death, but that's okay. I can bring you back to life. So that's why he's going to do it. And if you want to do it, we want you to think about the same kinds of things. We'll help you to do that. But let's think for a minute about what God has done in letting Jesus die and providing our Emancipation Proclamation.